Good morning. This is Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5. I'm your host, Tovin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. And my co-host, Patrick Kulkin, is somewhere in South Florida lamenting the loss of his beloved Notre Dame, who obviously they lost to Alabama Monday night. Hopefully his morning will be over by next week and he'll rejoin us. In the first part of today's show, we discuss an alleged Las Vegas murder plot that gets more interesting with every new piece of information. And we look back at the public safety issues of 300,000 revelers coming to Las Vegas for New Year's Eve. Later in the show, Las Vegas Weekly editor Sarah Felberg will join us to discuss what she is most excited about for 2013. But here with us now is Brian Nordley, breaking news and cops reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Pleasure to be here.
And now, Brian, you worked on New Year's Eve. Is that right? And this is your first New Year's in Las Vegas?
Yeah, never first New Year's in Las Vegas, yeah.
So what were your impressions just as somebody who hasn't witnessed the craziness?
Well, it was certainly an impressive display. I mean, just the ability to stroll up and down the strip. I was mostly stationed on the strip working, and just getting to watch all the madness of people running up and down and just in crazy dressed up and outfits, and it was a lot of fun. Just a lot of people that were strolling to the different casinos and just having a good time, shouting, lots of people giving out free hugs with these free hug signs, which I thought was hilarious, and blowing on vuvuzelas and other noisemakers, and it was a lot of what I kind of expected as well. But the fireworks show was pretty impressive, and I think that was kind of the highlight for just about everybody's night.
And did you have any problems getting to the strip, like just on your, just doing your job as a reporter? Where'd you park?
I actually ended up having connections with a friend who lived nearby. And yeah. So I got to avoid the nightmare of, driving. But, just walking, as I was walking around, you could just, the side streets that were just beyond the strip, I think near Koval and Flamingo, were just absolutely jam-packed. And, I saw, you had emergency vehicles driving on the opposite side of the road just to, so they could, weave through traffic and, get to where they needed to be. It was just an absolute nightmare. I was so glad I got to avoid that.
Right. And was there any major crimes on New Year's Eve, anything to report, or was it a pretty quiet night?
All in all, it was a pretty quiet night. There was a couple crazy stuff that happened. One guy got injured in Northeast Valley. Just apparently he got struck by a firework that was, fired off during celebration that was fired during a celebration. And then another person, just six arrests, mostly domestic violence issues during the night. Just being on the strip itself, people were pretty well behaved, for as raucous as New Year's Eve can get. They're really, I didn't, personally see any real fights that broke out or any issues, in terms of safety, in terms of, police needing to get involved. Mm-hmm. Which, certainly surprised me. I was expecting a little bit more than that. But.
Right. And then after the fireworks, I understand it was cold on New Year's Eve night. And I understand after the fireworks, then everybody kind of scattered, and that led to maybe just some logistics problems. Or
yeah, the post fireworks was where things got a little scary. Maybe it's like this every year, but me just not experiencing it, it definitely seemed a little dangerous. It was just a human log jam where, you had this, they have fence barriers that allow police to get up and down the strip. But what that does is it also creates a log, a pending almost like bottlenecks, all up and down the strip that, get these people. So, once the fireworks, and you got hundreds of thousands of people watching these fireworks, and then they all want to go back to their hotels, go in different directions, and they can't move, because everyone's just trying to push and shove. And, so it definitely was a situation where if a fight did break out or a weapon was, pulled out or, someone gets knocked down, I couldn't see how that would be prevented. It was definitely a little frightening. Definitely raises some questions about, how they could do that a little bit, help people leave the strip a little bit more efficiently come New Year's, next New Year's. And, and the other thing that, was kind of scary was, people brought their children and, they had, how do you navigate a child through this log jam of people? Right. I mean, that's something that just, you know, kind of scary to think about.
So. Right. And so in some casinos I heard where they were like barring people who didn't have like hotel keys or some, you know, ticket to a show at that casino, right? So they couldn't get in.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the casinos, Cosmo was one of them. A couple others did that as well, where they were only allowing hotel guests in. And so that was something that another friend of mine mentioned was new this year that they hadn't done before. And so that kind of created some issues. And then some casinos actually ended up closing their doors after the fireworks display, not allowing other people to get in. And I was told that that's mainly whether or not they reach their full capacity. But I had one guy call in and tell me just that, you know, he had parked in the hotel and ate dinner there and had left just for the fireworks and wanted to go back in. They wouldn't let him in. And so now he's just trapped in this sea of people that he can't move in.
Right.
And so that was some frustrations that I heard from other people as well.
And Ryan, how coordinated are the efforts between the casinos and Metro Police and Public Works? Are they all talking to each other on New Year's Eve to say like, hey, this is what's happening, or this is where the pedestrians need to head towards? How coordinated is the plan?
Well, as far as casinos are concerned, they just do their own thing and they don't really tell anybody. One Metro Police officer I was talking to who deals with handling events down on the Strip says they don't know what the casinos are planning to do, whether, you know, they're going to limit it to guests, you know, to hotel guests only for access, or their own, you know, access to their hotel. They're not informed of that until the day of, like until they actually are on the Strip and they see it at the same time as all the people out there. And as far as like casinos closing down because they're at full capacity, that's also something that it's 100% just the casino's decision. They don't inform Metro Police. They don't inform anybody else. You know what, hey, heads up, you know, we're going to be locked down here. So they're completely separate. They do their own thing, as they do. but as far as everything else that's on the Strip, it's a coordinated effort to set up these barriers by Metro Police and Public Works. But, you know, really it comes down to Metro Police determining what's best for public safety. Public Works generally just provides these bike rack fences and you know, drops them off and picks them up and, you know, really just cleans up the mess after New Year's Eve. Other than that, it's Metro Police's decisions to determine, you know, where these barriers should be, how much space they need, and, you know, what roads to close off and that sort of thing. And so it's a very, very interesting, you know, situation you know, But as this year has gone by, though, I mean, despite, you know, a couple people's concerns and just the logjam of people that, you know, presented a scary situation, you know, I was talking to a police officer who said, you know, that this year went incredibly smooth. They really didn't hear of have many issues. There was no stampedes, anything like that. And they've been doing these fences, you know, gates for about you know, 6-7 years now, and each year it's gone a little bit better. You know, so that was something that was interesting to hear. And he said, you know, the main reason for them is that they take up about one lane on both sides of the Strip, east and west side, or whatever, and basically that allows the police to move up and down and control the area and have people stationed and. You know, so they can, whether it's a fire truck that needs to get by or an emergency vehicle, you know, they have that lane to access to go up and down and then get into the crowd. He said the one year that they didn't do the barriers about 7 years ago or so, there was an incident where there was someone set a palm tree on fire in the median, and then the fire truck came to put it out, except the crowd just gathered around the fire truck and just started taking, you know, all its, you know, equipment off. So he suggested that may have had something to do with why we have these fences and barriers. So while they kind of create almost a, you know, scary situation, almost a hazard to health, it's also almost necessary. So it's kind of an interesting setup in that way.
I gotcha. All right, and before I want to, we have to talk about this case that you reported on yesterday where, let's see, it all started on November 14th, 4:35 a.m. Two men drove up beside the car of Robert, is it Bessie?
Bessie.
Yeah. And as he was driving south on I-15 near the Valley of Fire, and they shot at him, hit him in his neck, and that's all the information we had on that day. And case just keeps getting stranger as we go on. So, like, flesh it out from there. Yeah. What do we find out after the shooting?
Well, this one's a doozy. This one is not a common case. It's almost like it almost seems like a movie or something. Just so bizarre. But essentially what's kind of pieced together is slowly they learn that, you know, one of the suspected shooters that they had placed in the car based off of a convenience store video happened to be his adopted son named Michael Bessie. And then the other suspected suspect was this man's the adopted son's uncle, Richard Pearson. And so they targeted those, and then they find out, or they release information saying that this is a potential highway for murder plot or a murder plot, because apparently Robert Bessie's wife, who he's in the middle of getting a divorce with, Amy Pearson is her name, she had taken out a $250,000 life insurance policy on him, and you know, on top of that, you know, with his pensions and you know and all that stuff, if he died, you know. They could, you know, conceivably collect, you know, $400,000.
Wow.
But, you know, if their divorce is terminated, you know, or that if the divorce is finalized, you know, all that is terminated and they don't, you know, collect anything. And so slowly this thing is just turn, you know, shed, the arrest report has just kind of shedded light on a very dysfunctional, you know, seeming family situation.
Right. So the adopted son was arrested, right? The brother, Amy Pearson's brother, yeah, right, was also arrested. He's suspected of being in the car during the shooting. And then, and now Amy Pearson has been arrested. That's the news that happened, what, yesterday or a couple days ago?
The wife was just recently arrested for, you know, her involvement in the murder plot as well, or for her suspected involvement in the murder plot. And you know, so the report, you know, really kind of shed some other details that were quite interesting. One was allusions to a possible relationship between the adopted son and the mother, an intimate relationship you know, kind of raises some eyebrows. There was, you know, Robert Bessie had, you know, told police that, you know, that his son seemed unnaturally close, and another co-worker of Michael Bessie, you know, mentioned seeing, you know, Michael and his mother interacting, you know, in an intimate and, you know, fashion. You
in
know.
An inappropriate way for an adoptive son and an adopted mother.
Yeah, and so that was an interesting twist. And then they threw in the fact, you know, that there was also allegation. Michael Bessie told police that, you know, his father, you know, was both mentally and physically abusive toward him and, you know, the mom, Amy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so that, you know, that kind of, you know, sees like there's, you know, both parties, you know, kind of have, you know, some issues. And so it's definitely been a case that's just kind of just layer after layer of just, you know, more detail and more just craziness, it seems.
Right. And this, I don't know if you remember this, but earlier in the year, there was some case where I think it was a retired fireman hired a homeless man to kill his estranged wife. And so a lot of these murder trials, I hope this doesn't become a pattern in Las Vegas.
Certainly, yeah.
And Bessie, he was hit in the neck, right? Is he okay now?
Or? Yeah, Bessie, he ended up, he was shot and he ended up only being hit in the neck. And, you know, he went to the hospital, got four staples. I think the arrest report indicated that he was, you know, going through, you know, just some physical therapy. But other than that, you know, he was fine, fully functioning from what it sounded like, and was able to, you know, help identify the different suspects in this case, and seems to be, you know, doing well, and as far as the arrest report indicates. And so it's been certainly a crazy situation.
All right. Well, hopefully maybe we can bring you back here in the future to update the details of the case. But Brian, thanks for joining us on the show, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Definitely. Thank you.
All right, you're listening to KUNV 91.5, and now for the second part of the show, we bring in Las Vegas Weekly editor Sarah Feldberg. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Sarah's here to share some of the things that she's excited about for the new year. But before, I wanted to ask you, you know, you obviously, you're out and about. What did you do for New Year's Eve?
Well, I was lucky enough to be invited to spend my New Year's Eve at the Cosmopolitan. So I got to ring in the New Year's Eve watching the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and of course, as always, they put on a fabulous show. They're really, really high energy, and they're running around without their shirts on and screaming and singing. And it was a pretty fun way to start 2013.
And did you have any problems getting to the Strip or anything, or do you have it all figured out now?
Actually, no. I live downtown, so for me, it's actually pretty easy to get to the back end of the Strip and to get to Harmon, which is kind of how we usually cross over and get to Cosmopolitan. And sketchy as it may sound, we just pulled over to Harmon, where the police had a blockade kind of barring you from going across to actually drive on the Strip. And there was a guy wearing a Patriots hat, you know, with a sign that said $20 parking in front of some big warehouse building. And I gave him $20. I'm a Patriots fan, and so I trusted him by nature. And my car was still there when we got back. So, you know, I think my trust was well placed.
That's all you can ask for. All right. Well, well, let's move ahead, right? We're in the new year. That's all behind us. Let's look ahead. So what kind of openings, events, what are you looking forward to in terms of the nightlife and entertainment world of Vegas in the new year?
Well, there's a lot going on in 2013. I think it's going to be a pretty exciting year. Vegas and the Vegas economy is starting to come back, so you're seeing new development. And one of the biggest things, one of the biggest stories, I think, business-wise in the coming year is going to be Link. This is the Caesars Entertainment property. It's kind of taking over a big portion of the center Strip right by the Flamingo and what's now being called the Quad that used to be Imperial Palace. This is a huge development. It's going to be a retail, restaurant, nightlife entertainment development. John Gray, who's, I believe, the general manager of the project, is actually one of the people that we are watching in 2013 in our 13 to Watch in 2013 issue that comes out soon. So we're really keeping an eye on that. And that venue is going to have music venues. It's going to have restaurants. It's going to have shopping. And it really, I think, is going to function like a kind of lifestyle center and really create some buzz on that side of the Strip. And it's also going to, of course, include what we're calling observation wheels these days, which are really
Ferris wheels,
but like the coolest Ferris wheel ever, like a Ferris wheel on steroids.
And for anybody who's been to London, it's basically the London Eye.
It is the London Eye. There's also one in Singapore that's very popular. So this is an enormous Ferris wheel, bigger than anything you've probably seen before, unless you've been to London. And instead of your regular sort of little carts that you ride around in, there are these big cars that are enclosed, and I believe they're supposed to have glass flooring so you can look down. There's going to be a bar, and it's you're really a slower, more observational experience.
There's a bar inside the cabin?
Not inside the actual cabin, but inside the space where you buy your tickets. So while you wait to ride the observation wheel, you can get drunk.
And we're gonna have two of these things.
We are gonna have two of these things. As far as I know, the Link one is moving forward a little more quickly. There is construction also on the south end of the Strip, right by Mandalay Bay across the street, and there's supposed to be an observation wheel there as well. I haven't heard an update recently on when we're expecting that to open, but the Link development is currently slated to open in December of 2013.
Okay, and then and what else is coming up in 2013? We have some other...
Yeah, there's a lot coming up in 2013. One of the things I'm most excited about is the Life is Beautiful Festival. This is scheduled for fall of 2013. And the guy who's kind of in charge of it is Rehan Chowdhury. He was the entertainment director for the Cosmopolitan when it opened. And he went out on his own and started a marketing company last year in 2012. And his big project for the year is this festival. It's really slated to be sort of a multidisciplinary festival taking place downtown. I think the centerpiece is a music element, and there'll be big national bands playing. But there will also be food aspects, dining, cocktail aspects, probably some art aspects, and I'm really excited to see kind of how it all pans out. It's a really ambitious project, and he's gotten a lot of funding from some of the downtown interests, and right now I think it sounds like something really exciting for the city of Vegas. It feels like something more geared towards locals than tourists, and I think having a really big music festival with national acts coming to play is something that Vegas has been missing since Vegas closed a while back, and of course we have Neon Reverb, which is fantastic and brings in some big acts, but is really primarily a local music festival and is fabulous that way. But it's going to be nice to have something a little different as well.
Mm-hmm. And combined with, we got Life is Beautiful in fall 2013. It's also when Zappos is supposed to finish their move to downtown. So that should be an exciting time.
Yeah, it's actually
to see things downtown.
I interviewed Zach Ware recently, who's part of Downtown Project and Work in Progress and the Vegas Tech Fund. But his main kind of job right now is heading up the development of the Zappos campus. And that's slated to open, I believe, September 3rd, 2013. So that's coming. And I think you're going to see leading up to that and immediately afterwards just a ton of development downtown. And I'm really excited about that. The Shipping Container Park is supposed to open next summer. There's a new theater right on the corner of Fremont and Las Vegas Boulevard, the Inspire Theater. That's going to be opening this summer. And you're just going to see more and more venues. One of the ones that I'm most excited about is Fremont Country Club. This is going to be, I believe the address is 601 East Fremont. And this is a mid-sized music venue. It's something that we really need more of in Vegas. And there's been kind of a void for a little while. So this is a great thing opening. I'm really excited to see what kind of music they book and what kind of life it brings to Fremont East.
And now you're a foodie, and as I believe, and you know these. So what are the hot restaurants of 2013? What are you excited to see open, to try out that you haven't tried yet?
Sure, I am a foodie. I love eating, and it's one of my favorite things about living in Las Vegas is just that we have such a vibrant dining scene, both on and off the Strip, and 2013 is really only going to push that forward in more exciting directions. We've got a couple things that just opened recently. Andrea's at Encore opened December 28th, and that is in the space that was formerly occupied by Switch Restaurant, if anybody stopped by there. This is a kind of hip Asian gastro pub. It's under Chef Joe Elevado, who was at Social House for a while. I believe he started at Nobu a while back. This guy is super, super talented. The space, I walked in the other day, it's just stunning. Steve Angelo from Swedish House Mafia is their musical chef, they're calling him. So there's going to be sort of a nightlife aspect infused into the restaurant. But it's just a really gorgeous property. And it's right next to Surrender, and I think it's going to be a fun place to eat before a night on the town. So that's one place. There are so many places to look forward to. I'm a big Top Chef fan, and there are two sort of Top Chef-y restaurants opening in 2013 that I'm excited about. The first is Tom Colicchio's Unnamed Steakhouse at the Mirage. We don't have a name for it yet, but it's supposed to open this summer. Tom already has craft steak at the MGM Grand. That man knows his meat really, really well. And, I can't wait to see what he brings to the Mirage. I know we interviewed him earlier this past year, and he talked about, you know, trying to do something a little bit different with this steakhouse. So I'm excited for that. And then recently opened, I believe, January 1st at Tivoli Village, is Poppy Den. This is another kind of Asian gastropub. We're going to throw that word. I think gastropub is going to be thrown around a lot in 2013. This one comes from Angelo Sosa. He's a former Top Chef contestant, and he has been mostly based out of New York until recently. He has a place there called Social Eats, which I believe he's going to be renaming Poppy Den as this one sort of opens and, you know, hits its grand opening. But the space is beautiful. They're doing small plates, kind of really interesting East meets West menu. It's already open. You can check it out. And it'll be fun to see what he brings to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. And what about places that you tried towards the end of 2012 that are excited about you, you know, that you want to get back to and try other things in their menu?
Absolutely. One of the biggest ones for me has been Chada Thai and Wine. This is a tiny little place in Chinatown. It's right on Jones, just at Spring Mountain Road. And it's opened by a guy who used to work at Lotus of Siam, which is, of course, you know, a legendary Thai restaurant in Las Vegas. He's gone out on his own, he and his wife, and the restaurant is fabulous. It's Thai food. It's very reasonably priced, and it really just brings incredible flavors. I've been twice in the last 2 weeks, and each time I've tried new things. I've really enjoyed every single thing that I've tried, and the owner is always there working. He is more than happy to kind of direct your meal and give you recommendations, and I think it's probably pretty hard to go wrong with anything you eat there.
And anywhere else that you recommend in terms of places that you have tried already?
Sure. Here's another one. This is actually close to our offices in Henderson. It's called Top Notch Barbecue. People who remember Top Notch might think of it as a food truck, but the food truck closed down, and the owner has actually found a brick and mortar location. It's right at Eastern and Serene, and this guy does wonders with the smoker. The sign is really small right now. It's easy to miss, but you can actually smell the smoker cooking meat as you pull into the parking lot, and the food doesn't disappoint. He makes really killer pork ribs, really amazing pulled pork. There is a sweet potato casserole that's just, it's really like ribs sticking comfort food stuff, and it's super, super good. They just opened recently, so I think he's still getting the word out right now, but I think it's going to do really, really well in 2013, and I know I'll certainly be eating there fairly often.
And one thing we haven't mentioned much of is like theater shows. I know the Smith Center has their Broadway series coming up. And then also we'll have to wait for 2014, right, to see one of the ones you're most excited about.
Yes, I have been waiting. And people who read the weekly website probably know this because I've written about it on multiple occasions. But I have been dying to see Book of Mormon. And the play is finally coming. The musical is finally coming to Las Vegas. There have been rumors a while back that it might land at the Venetian. The AEG was trying to book it somewhere. The Smith Center signed it. It's coming to Las Vegas, not until summer 2014. So we've got about 18 months to kill before it comes, which should be plenty of time for me to memorize the entire soundtrack. But in the meantime, the Smith Center does have their Broadway Las Vegas series. A number of great plays are coming up. I believe West Side Story is one of them, and that's, a personal favorite and a lot of people's favorites, really. So I'm excited to see that one. The entertainment in Las Vegas never really fails. And we're even going to see entertainment, I think, integrated into nightclubs more in 2013 as well. Light Group and Cirque du Soleil are collaborating on a new club opening at Mandalay Bay called Light. And it really is going to be a nightclub space, but infused with a performance aspect. And I'm really excited to see what they bring. Light, the nightclub, was a previous Light Group venue that was really beloved and popular, and I think lasted for about 6 years on the Strip, which is a long time in nightclub years. So they're reviving that name, and I know they're trying to create something really, really special to bring that back to the Strip, and I can't wait to see what they do.
Right. And finally, and we know Rock of Ages just opened in the Venetian in the Blue Man Group's old theater, and I have a feeling you got to check it out, right?
I did.
At the media night, and what were just your first impressions?
I did. It's a really exuberant, fun, silly show. If you are a child of the 80s and, Bon Jovi, those Whitesnake, if that's the music you grew up with, you will have a blast at this show. It's a sing-along kind of thing. It doesn't take itself seriously in the slightest. I can tell you some of the people around me at the show were rocking out pretty hard. They give you these little faux lighters, and at certain points, the ushers will kind of gesture to the audience and show you that you're supposed to raise your lighters up and salute the Rock. And people were really, really taking part in the show and seemed to really get into the spirit of the songs that they used during the entire production. So I think, if you're a child of the 80s and that's your favorite music, you're going to have a blast at Rock of Ages. And then afterwards, you can go over to the Bourbon Room, which is the venue that the whole musical sort of takes place at the Bourbon Room. But you can go over to the Bourbon Room, which is now a bar at the Venetian, and you can rock out there. You can drink a lot of bourbon, and you can have your own little Rock of Ages experience.
All right. Well, there's a lot to look forward to in 2013. You've been listening to Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5. Thanks to our guests today, Brian Nordley, and Las Vegas Weekly editor Sarah Feldberg. Thank you to our producer, Steven Zeller, and we'll see you next week.